humbug.
Merry Christmas. Out upon Merry Christmas. What's Christmas time to you but a time for paying bills without money? A time for finding yourself a year older and not an hour richer? If I could work my will, every idiot who goes about with Merry Christmas on his lips should be boiled with his own pudding and buried with a stake of holly through his heart.
That's Ebenezer Scrooge in Charles Dickens' A Christmas Carol. I'm Emily Auerbach.
And I'm Norman Gilliland. This is University of the Air.
Every year, theater companies stage dramatizations of Dickens' 1843 classic tale of Christmas past, Christmas present, and Christmas yet to come. Why is this story about the miserly Ebenezer Scrooge's transformation endured? What choices are the director and actors in a Madison production making this year to be true to Dickens' original while also offering a fresh interpretation? Joining us to explore the theatrical approach to the fictional world of Charles Dickens' A Christmas Carol is Roseanne Sheridan, director of the Children's Theater of Madison, which opens its production of Christmas Carol on December 14th. With her in the studio are three cast members: Robert Spencer, who plays the one and only Ebenezer Scrooge; Donovan Armbruster in the role of the dead business partner Jacob Marley, as well as some gentlemen; and Coleman, who will be reading the parts of both the jolly employer Fezziwig and a businessman.
Welcome, one and all, to University of the Air.
Nice to be here. Yeah. Thank you.
Just have to prove you're all here. See, we have to hear even more voices than there are people since you're doubling up on some characters. I am tempted to ask first where you all come from in terms of your experience with this piece.
Okay.
There are so many versions of it out there, and of course it's been done so many times over the years. It's been boiled down to as short as 25 minutes, and of course, full-length play on the other extreme. So what were your experiences up to this point with productions of A Christmas Carol?
Well, this is the first production that I've actually directed of this play, and I, you know, of course, have seen other productions and have been aware of many and read many of the other adaptations before selecting this particular adaptation for this company. And so it's been fun to really delve into it and going back and listening to versions on tape and Patrick Stewart reading it and reading the original Dickens and all that too. But last year was the first time I directed it for the Children's Theater of Madison.
I suppose the most famous Scrooge that we have recording of would be Lionel Barrymore. Are you familiar at all with his interpretations of it?
Yes, it's a wonderful Scrooge.
Yeah. My favorite is Alistair Sim, actually, from in the 30s that was filmed.
And what is it, do you think, that he brought to it?
His, first of all, how nasty he was to begin with. but his sense of humor throughout was always there and coming through, even though. And his transformation was just brilliant. I mean, it's...
Yes, you do have to have a certain stature to the character in order to make him transform convincingly. He can't be too much of a caricature.
No, you have to earn it. Learn those lessons from those spirits, and hopefully if you do, when it comes time for the transformation, you're there.
Emma is struck by certain stories and how they... I don't know. They just can be adapted and done in many different forms. I mean, there's Muppet's Christmas Carol and Mickey Mouse Christmas Carol.
Mr. Magoo.
Oh, yes. Just
one of the best.
But not too
great an influence, we hope.
But it's always, I guess, from my point of view, it's always the Dickens that comes through intact no matter what you do to it. The message and certain words stay there. Now, the adaptation that you're using here in Madison, who is the playwright then?
Romulus Linney is the playwright that adapted the script, and it was originally commissioned and adapted for the Milwaukee Repertory Theater in 1997, and they used it for quite a few years until they changed to the current adaptation that they're using. And I like it because it's very true to the original. I think the tempo of it is good. I think that stylistically it works well for a family theater production. It has some room for carols to come in, but it's not a musical. And it is just an aesthetic that I appreciate because it's sort of a classic tale, classically told.
Well, I'm always struck, too, by the way, when anybody says Ebenezer Scrooge, it's the early Scrooge, the one we opened with, the Bah Humbug Scrooge. That's the one we think of. We don't really think of the Scrooge at the end. I mean,
that one's not very interesting.
No, but we love the nasty Scrooge. And, you know, one of my favorite scenes is the near the beginning when gentlemen come trying to get donations.
Right, right. Two philanthropists come in. They're part of a series of visitors. They come into the counting house, the cold and dank counting house with Bob Cratchit works away and Scrooge works away on Christmas Eve. And in come these two charity men, philanthropists, trying to raise some money for the poor at this time of year.
Merry Christmas! Scrooge and Marley's, I believe.
Have we the pleasure of addressing Mr. Scrooge or Mr. Marley?
Mr. Marley's been dead these 7 years.
7 years?
7 years is very night, as a matter of fact.
But the sign...
is perfectly good as it is. Why buy another one?
Our credentials, sir.
The Larger London...
Amalgamated Association.
For the poor.
We have no doubt that Mr. Marley's liberality is well represented by his surviving partner.
Liberality?
At this festive season of the year, Mr. Scrooge, it is more than usually desirable that we should make some slight provision for the poor and destitute.
Who suffer greatly.
They need food.
They need clothing.
They need shelter.
They need the warmth of our concern.
Hundreds of thousands are in want of common comforts.
Are there no prisons?
Plenty of prisons.
And the workhouses, are they still in operation?
There are many institutions in London where the poor must work like slaves.
We wish we could say there were not.
I'm very glad to hear it. I was afraid from what you said at first that something had occurred to stop them in their useful course.
Well, a few of us are under the impression that workhouses scarcely furnish cheer of mind or body to the multitude. We are endeavoring to raise a fund to buy the poor some meat and drink and means of warmth.
What shall we put you down for?
Nothing.
Nothing?
Nothing?
You wish to be anonymous.
I wish to be left alone. I don't make myself merry at Christmas, and I can't afford to make idle people merry. I help to support the establishments I have mentioned. They cost enough, and those who are badly off must go there.
Many can't go there, and many would rather die.
If they had rather die, they had better do it and decrease the surplus population.
My dear sir...
Mr. Scrooge...
It's not my business. It's enough for a man to understand his own business and not to interfere with other people's. Good afternoon, gentlemen.
It's a tribute to Dickens that he could write something like that and make it so edgy between humorous and serious. It's a serious social dialogue going on here, but the edge on it is just short of tipping the whole thing over into a joke.
Yes, we have to be a little, you know, ride that line a little bit because they are, the philanthropists could be a little like Tweedledee and Tweedledum, you know. But, you know, I think that's a wonderful balance of the play, too, and particularly appealing to families and younger people as well as older people, you know, is just finding that right balance between things that are a little humorous. But there's message in it, too.
Well, I have a question for you, Robert, which is when you're playing Scrooge, I'm assuming this is not your personality every day.
Oh, no. I'm sweetness in life.
Sweetness. But as you read those lines that you just did, as you deliver them, I'm just curious some of the things that you have to do mentally to enter into this person to make him a real person.
Well, I've calculated this is probably the 12th time I've played this this old Bah Humbugger. And through the years, he's become a part of me because I've had so much experience with him. So I immediately get into it, and I don't have to do that much preparation. The material itself is what supports me.
Is it possible that you're becoming more like him?
Oh. Well, there, I have my moments, shall we say. But somehow, as I each time I do it, I slip into him more easily. And that is kind of scary. But it's such a wonderful, delicious, rich character to play. And every time I do it, and I've done many different adaptations of it, I seem to discover new aspects of his character.
Well, he is, of course, the star. Scrooge is the star of Christmas Carol. And that's obviously the biggest plum for an actor. Mm. I mean, you can really get nasty and
yes.
have a good time doing it. But what are the other plums for roles in this piece?
Well, there's
Christmas plums,
I
suppose.
I think one of the wonderful plums in this show for an actor is the role of Marley, the spirit of Marley coming back and giving Scrooge the warning of what must happen. It scares the life out of him practically, and then foretells of what's how he's going to get visited by various spirits through the night.
And before we hear that scene, can you describe, since this is radio and we don't see the costumes that,
sure.
that you'll have on the stage, can you describe the way you have Marley look in this scene? I mean, after all, he is dead.
Right. Well, he has sort of the remnants of his formal clothing because he did die 7 years ago. So he's still in those clothes. But they're very stiff and they're very almost like and tarnished. And he's loaded with chains. And he has a lockbox and a cash box and all kinds of things that he's dragging along with him.
Straight out of Dickens.
Yes, mm-hmm. indeed. And he's helped theatrically by sound effects of chains too. So every time he makes a move, there's much reverberation of this metal sound and chain sound. And his makeup, of course, is very much very green and sallow and rather spooky. And I must say, I think I have one of the spookiest Marleys on the planet in this show. So it's really fun. And he's got a wig that's sort of stuck in with his pigtail kind of sticking up. So it does look like he's been caught and trapped in this shape. And he actually shares with him what's been happening for him for 7 years in Limbo Land.
Ah! Who are you? Do I know you? Are you a ghost? Or can you speak? What do you want with me?
Much.
Who are you?
Ask me who I was.
All right, who were you then?
In
a ghost
life,
you're most particular.
I was your partner, Jacob Marley.
Jacob? Well, you look something like him. Won't you... Can you sit down?
I can.
Do it, then.
You don't believe in me.
I do not.
Why do you doubt your senses?
Because a little thing affects them. A slight disorder of the stomach deranges them. Or you may be an undigested bit of beef, a blot of mustard, a crumb of cheese... A fragment of an underdone potato. There's more of gravy than of grave about you, whatever you are. Mercy! Mercy! Dreadful apparition!
Do you believe in me now?
I do. I must. But why do you walk the earth? And why do you come to me?
It is required of every man that the spirit within him should walk among his fellow men. And if that spirit goes not forth in life, it is condemned to do so after death. It is doomed to wander through the world. Oh, woe is me! To see the misery it has caused and the happiness it cannot share.
You are fettered. Tell me why.
I wear the chains I forged in life. I made them link by link and yard by yard. I put them on of my own free will, and of my own free will I wore them. Is it strange to you? Your chain was as full and heavy and thick as this one 7 Christmas Eves ago. You have labored on it since.
Old Jacob Marley, speak comfort to me, Jacob.
I have none to give. My spirit never walked beyond our counting house. Mark me. And now, many weary journeys lie ahead. No rest, no peace. Only the incessant torture of remorse.
But why? You were always a good man of business, Jacob.
Business! Business! Mankind was my business! The common welfare was my business! Charity, mercy, forbearance, and benevolence were all my business. And at this rolling time of the year, I suffer most. Hear me. My time is nearly gone.
I will, but don't be too hard upon me.
And don't be flowery, Jacob, please.
I will be flowery. I am here tonight to give you a solemn warning. You have only one chance of escaping my fate. Take it.
Yes, yes, I will. You were always a good friend to me, Jacob. Thank ye.
You will be haunted by 3 spirits.
Haunted?
By 3 spirits.
Is that the chance you mentioned, Jacob?
It is.
I think I'd rather not.
Without their visits, you cannot hope to shun the path I tread. Expect the first tonight when the bell tolls 1. Expect the second when the bell tolls 2.
Well, couldn't I take them all at once and get it over with, Jacob?
Expect the third when the bell tolls 3. For your own sake, remember what has passed between us. Look to see me no more.
And he disappears out the window.
Scared me.
You know, it was about 40 years before I figured out that Marley was actually a play on the word marl, meaning clay. You know, and this is somebody literally who has come out of the ground. Mm-hmm. And Christmas is so much about the past and dead things coming back to life that this play does touch a nerve there, doesn't it, in terms of all of these kind of archetypal feelings that we have about the winter solstice.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, the name Scrooge, too, which could just easily be spelled S-C-R-E-W-G-E, because he's putting thumb screws to Bob Cratchit and everyone else.
Tight-fisted screw he's referred to.
Yes, tight-fisted hand at the grindstone. The
genius of Dickens at work in subtle and not-so-subtle ways.
Mm-hmm, indeed.
We're going to follow more of the story of Christmas Carol when we continue in a moment with University of the Year.
Support for Wisconsin Public Radio comes from Discovery World Museum in Milwaukee, where innovation, science, and technology meet in a host of hands-on exhibits. The Hive, a 3D virtual reality exhibit, opens December 1st. Details at discoveryworld.org.
I've endeavored in this ghostly little book to raise the ghost of an idea which shall not put my readers out of humor with themselves, with each other, with the season, or with me. May it haunt their houses pleasantly, and no one wish to lay it.
their faithful friend and servant, Charles Dickens, December 1843. That's a preface to Charles Dickens' A Christmas Carol. I'm Emily Auerbach, back with Norman Gilliland. Our guests include Roseanne Sheridan, director of the Children's Theater of Madison, and three cast members from the current production, Robert Spencer as Ebenezer Scrooge, Donovan Armbruster in the role of the dead business partner, Jacob Marley, and Coleman, who'll be reading Fezziwig and a Businessman. Roseanne, when you put on A Christmas Carol and tap into a tradition that's all over, I saw that there's also productions in Monroe, in many different places, just here in Wisconsin,
right,
are doing A Christmas Carol. What do you do to involve children in your production, which is one thing that makes the family theater different?
Well, there are quite a few children in this production, and one of the, you know, hallmarks, I think, of CTM is the inclusiveness of children and actually actors of all ages. There are about 23 kids in this production. And there are a number of scenes where, well, there's obviously the Cratchit children. In some productions, the Cratchit family can be quite large. In ours, it's about six. And there's a lot of class representation, orphans and beggars on the street, and the servants and the daughters of Fezziwig and some of the other younger represented characters in the play. So there's a lot of kids that have been in the show before, both here in Madison and in other places, and some of them were Tiny Tim at one time and now are playing, you know, Peter Cratchit or something like that. And I think they start to really enjoy the tradition of it and the recognition of the different characters over the years. And, oh, that's, you know, that's the Fezziwig scene and that's this scene. And so, and I think for the audience, too, it's fun to come back to the tradition each year and to see some familiar faces and a lot of new faces and feel how this show is just is a little different because of the energy of the cast. One of the magic elements of theater is that no show is ever the same because no combination of people is ever the same. So it's a wonderful opportunity. And in this production, we go from age 8 to almost 70, I think. So there's a lot of mentorship, and the kids learn from the older, both the older kids and the older actors. And I think, as I certainly learn from the kids, and I think the older actors learn from them too.
If you ever have kids overreacting in the audience, does it make it a little too scary sometimes for some of them?
You know, I haven't really heard that too much. I mean, I've heard a lot of parents ask me, is it going to be too scary? I don't know. It's not really.
Well, I'd have to say because I was ushering for a performance and there were children that got very scared by the Marley or very worried that Tiny Tim would not come back to life. I mean, definitely there's a strong reaction and there should be. I mean, it would scare me if people remained detached.
I think there's a healthy fear. I mean, a lot of kids will say, I hope it's really scary.
Yeah.
You know, I love the ghost of the future. It's so scary.
That's right. No,
you know?
Kids are alike. Each one goes in for a different thing.
I've seen them both sit on the edge of their seat and look wide-eyed and interested, and I've seen them sort of cower into their parents' arms or whoever they're with and then peek out again. But there's a lot of variety in the show. It's like, you know, I think there's enough balance that it's not all about spookiness and it's not all about fluff. So
the sets in this show, and as in the story, have a lot of potential for intensity to provide an intensity in the scene. I mean, for example, of course, the counting house in itself. Mm. But Scrooge's quarters, which Dickens gives us a wonderful description of, you know, how parsimoniously furnished they are, how grim they are. And then when they're illuminated by the visit of Marley, I mean, it's very intense. So I gather you get to take that ball and run with it too.
Well, we have chosen for several reasons. One is our aesthetic reason and the other is a financial reason to be more selective and less literal and realistic with the scenery. There's a world of the play that's created. The streets of London I thought were really important and the feeling of the homes and, you know, that kind of thing. And then otherwise it's because it is so much about Scrooge's memory, there's more fragmentation in the scenery, representation. The bed becomes very important. The bed rolls around and moves and chases him and, you know.
Well, the kids are going to love that.
You know, things like that. But because it is his dream mostly, so the windows are sort of fragmented. And the designer is Naina Ramey, who's a wonderful scenic designer. And She and I have worked together before, and so we didn't set out to recreate everything literally, but to represent it with very specific elements like the fireplace and the chair and the bed.
Well, and Robert, when you go with Christmas Past to take sort of a tour of your boyhood and all the rest of it, can you give us some sense of what you do with your voice and your personality to show that you're starting to soften as you see your childhood?
Well, I'm still kind of resistant with Past. Not till the end of her time there do I start taking in some of those lessons and recognizing them. But that section does include the boy Scrooge. So I see myself, what I used to be. And as Roseanne may have mentioned, we kind of stress the childlike quality in all of us. And I try to kind of, it's easy for me to become a child again because I'm an actor, you know. So, but that is kind of stressed in our production. And I easily slip into that and so enjoy that too.
So you see yourself, a lonely child, a mm-hmm. child at school and all that. And then you also see yourself when you were an apprentice. Can you set the scene for how it works with people?
Sure. You know, as he's shown various parts of his past, and he also goes back to the place where he learned business. And it's a wonderful scene because it really shows us Scrooge's proudest moment of his life as well as the beginning of where he started to harden. But early on in the scene, we meet the first businessman that he learned from, who he apprenticed under, Mr. Fezziwig. Always a fun role. And there's a party, and Fezziwig proposes a toast.
A toast! A toast! To all of us gathered, may tomorrow and the coming year find us joyful, healthy, prosperous, and above all, filled with the spirit of charity and kindness towards our fellows.
Hear, hear.
Doesn't sound much like Scrooge as an employer.
No, no. And, you know, because we see that it's the time when he gets promoted from being an apprentice to being a head clerk, but it also is the time he fell in love. And he met his, you know, the one and only woman that he ever loved. And we see him fall in love in this scene and how it all came out of this proud and wonderful moment. But then the next scene is like a year later, and it's where we've learned that he's become so interested in money and business that he's lost his joyfulness. He even has a plan to leave Fezziwig's and go into business with Mr. Marley, where he could earn even more money and he could adopt some of the investment strategies and steal some of the clients. You know, he's just, you can see the wheels turning. And we all know people like that, that get caught up in the game of it.
I think they're called adults.
Yeah. Capitalists.
As Scrooge journeys then with Christmas Present, who's decked all almost like Bacchus or something, right? Lots of fruit and greenery and abundance.
He has been like that in productions, and he's probably a little tamer in this one to give him a little more freedom of mobility. But he's definitely a jolly fellow, and his spirit is larger than life. Christmas Past, again, I kind of went back to some of the original where he was, Charles Dickens described her as almost childlike, like a combination of young girl and older woman. So that one is a female energy. And the Christmas Present is very much this jolly fellow.
Like a Falstaffian character.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
In that old English tradition.
And he comes in and he shows him many, many things. And then finally, towards the end of the journey of seeing things, trying to get him to see things as they are, listen to how people are seeing him, talking about him, about Scrooge. And then he shows them the Cratchit family at home. And the Cratchits are enjoying their meager meal with one little chicken for all those hungry mouths. And then Tim, of course, Tiny Tim, gives us the famous line, "God bless us, everyone."
Spirit. That boy.
Yes?
But it seems to me that today I've seen many little boys from the present and the past, but none so frail as this one. Tell me, Spirit, will Tiny Tim live?
I see a vacant chair in a poor chimney corner, and a crutch without an owner.
No, spirit.
If these shadows remain unaltered by the future, the child will die.
Well, when? 10 years, 5, or a month, a week, what?
What do you care? If children have to die, they had better do it and...
decrease the surplus population.
You know, that Dickens, he's shameless, isn't he?
Yeah. Well, and present, and present is a wonderful role, too, because he starts out with full of life. And by the time the last bell comes in, he's starting to lose some of his... He says, my time upon this earth is very short. It ends tonight. So he also sort of takes on some of the nothing is forever unless we do something now to make things different.
And in Dickens' text, he goes on to describe what looks like a foot or a claw that is protruding from under the robes of Christmas present, and then two children, wretched, abject, frightful, hideous, and miserable. Can you talk about what that is and how you show that on stage?
They are, you know, the Christmas present says, it's similar at the very beginning when Christmas past appears, I've chosen to have her with two children too. And they're called Forgiveness and Remembrance. And they're bright and white and, you know, light and angelic. And then these two are Ignorance and Want. And so they come out and they are very gaunt and wretched and almost seemingly deformed and, you know, begging and moaning and stuff like that. I think they're the representation of what happens when there's that loss of soul at such a young age.
And do you use a trap door to get them?
I wish.
Get rid of ignorance.
Next year, there's going to be many surprises. But this year, they come out. They appear sort of behind his robe. But we don't have a lot of bells and whistles in the show. We rely on the play, writing in the tradition of,
you know, Pilgrim's Progress. And
right.
That long literary tradition of personifying certain aspects of human condition.
Right, right.
But it must be such a challenge for those who try to set a fictional text when an author can just write, oh, he walked through the wall or
right,
did something,
right.
And then you have to actually stage it. It's another matter.
I think that's one of the things I look forward to as we are able to keep doing this particular adaptation is to try and explore some more choices around the spirit world in particular. I think there's lots of opportunities there to bring in some new and surprising elements for the audience.
The sky literally is the limit. I mean, there's a scene in there. It could almost be out of Superman where, in summary, they visit all these places in the course of the night and he takes hold of the robe, Scrooge does.
Right.
Literally flies around the world.
Right, right. And I think that this really fun. You know, this production really does invite the imagination. And there's some things that sort of spread out into the audience a little bit. And so it definitely feels like it expands and then it sort of comes back to the reality of the smaller world again.
One of the characters I know we don't have here in the studio, but he plays a role in this, is the nephew, Mr. Fred. Can you say something about what that character adds, the scenes that he's in?
Sure. And he's one of the first, you know, he is the first character that opens the play. And he is the son of Scrooge's late sister, and she only had and Scrooge loved his sister. We get to see one of the scenes where Scrooge is as a boy, and the actor is a young boy, and he's being kept at school over Christmas very harshly by the old schoolmaster, you know, and his sister comes to see him and says, I'm going to take you home. And, you know, we can just feel how that young boy wanted to go home and loved his sister. Well, she had one son. She died fairly young. And it is now Scrooge's nephew. Every year, Fred comes to visit Scrooge on Christmas Eve and invites him to come to dinner. Every year, Scrooge declines. But he never gives up hope. He even says, things between us can never be put aright until we are made friends. My mother's spirit can never rest. So he plucks on that string, but we don't never see any sign of that having any effect on Scrooge early on. When Christmas Present comes in, he takes him to see he takes Scrooge to see a scene where Fred is having a party. And they all play this game called Yes and No. You know, I'm thinking of an animal. Is it this? Is it living in menagerie? Is it an ass? Not exactly.
I know where we're going with this
one. So Scrooge watches, you know, this party and sees his nephew with these people and sort of joking around at his expense. And after all the things he's gone through, it starts to kind of do a little something to him. Like he says, you know, they don't like me. Well, did you expect them to?
And he also sees this sort of a different alternative to domestic life, this warmth, this happiness. It always reminds me of the way sometimes if you're walking down the street at night and you look in windows, lit windows, and you sort of imagine other people's families that maybe aren't.
Which I love to do.
And maybe these other families.
Oh, so you're the one.
But those other families are not dysfunctional, and they're all having, you know, family times and games and so on.
Right.
You get that. I think that's one of the appeals of that idea that your Scrooge is in the scene but not there at
right.
the same time. We've all sort of imaginatively been somewhere else.
Right. And he gets caught up in the game, too. He starts to get
right. –
yeah, he starts to participate, and we see it. And then they all laugh at him, and it sets him back a little bit again. But the nephew represents his link to his family, the only surviving relative, really. In addition to becoming more in touch with his own child, he also embraces family and home. And those are two really important words in the story.
We'll find out how it all plays out for Ebenezer Scrooge. I have some ideas how this might play out, but we'll find out a little bit more when we return in a moment. This is University of the Air.
Stay current on the topics of discussion on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Visit us online at WPR.org and sign up for the Ideas program notes. We'll keep you updated and informed online at WPR.org.
The phantom slowly, gravely, silently approached. When it came near him, Scrooge bent down upon his knee, for in the very air through which this spirit moved, it seemed to scatter gloom and mystery. It was shrouded in a deep black garment, which concealed its head, its face, its form, and left nothing of it visible save one outstretched hand. But for this, it would have been difficult to detach its figure from the night and separate it from the darkness by which it was surrounded. He felt that it was tall and stately when it came beside him, and that its mysterious presence filled him with a solemn dread. He knew no more, for the spirit neither spoke nor moved. "I'm in the presence of the ghost of Christmas yet to come," said Scrooge. The spirit answered not, but pointed downward with its hand. Some of that wonderful Dickensian prose from A Christmas Carol, which is our topic for University of the Year for the balance of this hour. I'm Norman Gilliland, back with Emily Auerbach. And our guests, the director of the Children's Theater of Madison production, Roseanne Sheridan, with us also, who plays Scrooge, Robert Spencer, with us too, is Marley, which is Donovan Armbruster, and Fezziwig and a Businessman are played by Coleman, who is also with us. This is, in this often dark piece, A Christmas Carol, the darkest moment when the future, this really grim reaper figure, appears before Scrooge and before our audience of children. So how do you balance that intensity with the need to keep them from running away screaming?
It was so wonderful to hear you read that, because what we've done is very true to that. And I think that one of the things is that there is some distance. I mean, it's not right on top of the audience, you know, but it's a surprising moment. I mean, it's a powerful moment. I think it's a visually and sound-wise a really great moment of the play. I think kids dig it. I mean, I think they kind of like, you know, I think it's kind of like, ooh, you know.
Just the way they like Halloween. Or
well,
ghost
sure.
Stories.
Absolutely.
It's what I call the
Absolutely.
Turning of the Scrooge.
Yeah, it's yeah. not.
This is where he really starts to kick over.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, kids have seen a lot. They've seen a lot of violence. They've seen a lot of, you know, they have these games that are 3D. I think what's wonderful about it is that it is so theatrical. And I think there's a part of all of us, and particularly young children too, that still want for things to be theatrical and not so literal. But there's smoke and there's light and there's this figure, and just like it says in there, the finger pointing and all that. But it's still on the stage, so I think there's still always that awareness that they're watching this performance. But I think they get involved with it, and I think that's a great thing.
Well, and the actor that plays the Christmas Future doesn't have to learn any lines, right?
No, not really.
I mean, it's a silent part. Robert, when you're playing opposite the ghost of Christmas Future, the ghost yet to come, I mean, you don't have much to work back and forth with the way you do with the other two ghosts, right?
It's like working with on blue screen, you know.
yeah.
But the young man who is playing the ghost this year, he doesn't have the trappings on him yet. So I see the expression on his face, and I will use that because it's very – it says exactly what I need for – and, of course, the pointing of the finger from scene to scene to scene is what catapults me into each scene. But the expression on Reed's face is something I will keep in my memory.
Well, and this is the pivotal moment for you, right? I mean, you
yes.
do change by the time the graveyard scene – ends, and how do you show that in the scene?
Ebenezer Scrooge. Oh, Spirit, hear me. I am not the man I was. I will not be the man I have been. Tell me I may sponge away the writing on this gravestone. Why show me all this if I am past all hope? Oh, Spirit, I will honor Christmas in my heart and try to keep it all the year. I will live in the past, the present, and the future. The spirit of all three will shine within me. I will not shut out the lessons they have taught me. I will not shut out all the goodness in the world. I will not shut out the bedpost.
Bedpost? My bedpost. Oh, and my curtains not torn down. Am I back home again with everything just as it was? My bed, my room, my house? No, it's different. I'm different. But how? I don't know exactly, but I am. I'm as light as a feather. I'm as happy as an angel. I'm as merry as a schoolboy. I'm as giddy as a drunken man. God rest ye merry, gentlemen. Oh, Jacob Marley, heaven and the Christmas time be praised for this. I say it on my knees, old Jacob, on my knees. What day is this? I don't know. How long was I among the spirits? I don't know. I don't know anything. I'm quite a baby. A child again. Never mind, I don't care. I'll be a child. A whoop! A whoop! Oh, dear.
Is this him throwing his back out?
Is yes, that what he's doing there? A little kick, yeah. Which harkens uh-huh. back to in the first act, in the Fezziwig scene, when he watches his younger self do this little jump up in the air and click his heels. So there's a lot of that sort of coming back around and bookending of things, you know, and even some of the casting, like I intentionally double casted some of the roles so that, for example, Belle, his love of his life, who's so wonderful in the first act, she doesn't come back as Belle, but the actor plays the Undertaker's woman in the future. So there's little sort of What could go awry? What could go wrong if people didn't go down the right path?
As to the dreamlike quality of it, too. Of
exactly.
Course, the roles can be all switched around in a dream.
And some of the people he meets in his life in current days seem to appear in this dream of different characters. And so there's lots of things like that. But, yeah, he clicks his heels and hurts his back.
So he feels like a schoolboy, but his body doesn't cooperate. And what are some of the other ways that we see Scrooge's change when he wakes up? How is it documented that he's changed now?
Well, he decides that one thing, the same young boy that came to visit him in the first scene and sung a carol and he chased out very rudely with his threatening to hit him with the ruler, comes back. And this time he gives the boy a sack of money and tells him to go and buy the turkey for the Cratchits. And then he decides not only that, but is he going to go through the town and make amends, giving things away and all this kind of stuff. It even surprises him along the way. Another lovely little bookend to the play is that he encounters the same two charity men that came in to visit him in the first scene, who he yelled at. And now he is going to see them again. And he's going to have a little different encounter with them.
Gentlemen, how do you do? I hope you succeeded in your fundraising for the poor yesterday. Merry Christmas to you both.
Mr. Scrooge!
That's my name. Not very pleasant to hear, I'll warrant. But let me change that. First, I beg your pardon for my neglect of your cause. And second, will you allow me to donate?
Why, Mr. Scrooge!
Are you serious?
Not a farthing less. A great many back payments are included in it, you see.
Thank you, sir.
We don't know what to say.
Well, don't say anything. Just come and see me about future contributions. Will you do that?
We will!
Thank ye. Much obliged. Bless you. I'm off.
And off he goes with singing carolers, come on stage with presents and all that. And the townspeople see him doing many of these things and are quite shocked and delighted.
The cynic would say, I don't know if he's scarier before or after this transformation. It reminds me a little bit of Jekyll and Hyde or even Dorian Gray. It's the same kind of two images for the same person.
Although, you know, I think how many of us can see that, you know, at some point, what makes somebody want to live their life a little differently? I think we probably all have those questions along the way.
I got to wonder about poor Marley, though, too. I mean, you know, here he's stuck. He doesn't seem to have gotten his chance.
I think maybe Scrooge's transformation will release him.
Yes, he can get some of those chains.
Or we can bring it back in the sequel.
Yeah. Well, and I've heard from people who, after attending the performance or after reading the book, I mean, it starts to sound like a telephone ad, but they'll reach out and touch someone. I mean, they'll call some long-lost relative or realize it's not too late. Some grudge that was held, some undone deed, something that you messed up that if you're still alive and kicking, you can change it.
Yeah, how wonderful is that to come through something that's also entertaining and theatrical without being pedantic and lecturing. I mean, that's the beauty of the theater. We get to find that out through stories, and the stories have bright spots and dark spots, and they're filled with singing and laughing and crying and all that.
I can't think of any other character offhand who's pulled through quite the knot hole that Scrooge is in such a relatively short period of time, though.
Yeah, under 2 hours.
Yeah, that's right. He's gone from A to Z, you know.
That's right.
He's gone through it all, past, present, and future, in a couple of intense hours.
And you should see the actor after the play's over.
He's sort of exhausted, isn't he?
Yeah.
But it is cathartic, I must say.
But it must be hard when you have to do a matinee and an evening performance. You have to do two in a row. I was going to ask each of you as actors if you have a favorite moment on stage, a moment of your character, one of your characters that you especially like, or the line you most like to deliver.
Well, that's easy for me. This is Coleman. I play Fezziwig, and it's the moment when I promote young Scrooge. Fezziwig has daughters but doesn't have any sons, and I think he's taken has a special affection for young Scrooge, who's done an excellent job as clerk, but so have several other people who work for him as well, and he's just promoted young Scrooge to head clerk in his office. And I think for Fezziwig, It's an emotional moment, and for young Scrooge, it's an emotional moment. It follows a joyous dance that happens on the stage. Unknown to us, Scrooge is looking over our shoulders watching all of this, but the audience can see him looking over our shoulders. And for me, that's my favorite moment.
And what about you, Donovan?
I like the redemptive quality of Marley, at least in the intensity of his purpose. He is there very much to address Scrooge and to give him a very distinct message, but it does have a redemptive nature to it. It does imply that this is the one way he may be able to escape the tortures of his existence. I can't really say I have a favorite line.
You just like to moan? Or
I have to say that I think Marley is blessed with some of the best dialogue, mm-hmm. certainly. And that makes it all very, very fun and rewarding to be involved with.
And last, Robert, is Scrooge?
So much to choose from.
Yes.
Do you like the bad Scrooge or the changed Scrooge?
Well, they're both fun to do, certainly. But at the end of this incredible journey, I do get to say, because I've learned this from Tiny Tim, God bless us, everyone.
Well, it's a great line that has echoed through the ages, and it works for Tiny Tim, it works for Scrooge, and of course, I can imagine many audiences have rallied to that final benediction that comes out of A Christmas Carol. Thanks again, one and all, for joining us, for enlightening us a little bit more about this traditional favorite, Charles Dickens' A Christmas Carol, coming to stage.
We look forward to seeing everyone at the Capitol Theater.
And the show runs from December 14th through the 23rd in Madison on two weekends in a row.
And our guests have been the director, Roseanne Sheridan. Scrooge inevitably has been with us, and a reformed man he is, I can see just in the past hour. Robert Spencer as Scrooge in the production. Donovan Armbruster as Marley. And both Fezziwig and a businessman in the form of Coleman. Again, thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you very much.
And break some legs. I'm Norman Gilliland with Emily Auerbach, hoping you'll join us for the next hour of University of the Air. Join us next Sunday afternoon at 4 when our guest is the articulate, the urbane, the entertaining Fred Plotkin, giving us some insights into how we can enjoy, really enjoy, opera. That's next Sunday afternoon here on Wisconsin Public Radio.